People love him already.
He's got the Rhode Island twang.
The long pass to Moore and a pin block from Martin.
Tune in to Cam's Corner.
He's going to make it here.
Draws the foul for another Rhode Island and one.
Podcast. He's got his own podcast.
It's good off the backboard and in.
On a break.
And we're back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Cam's Corner, Season 4, Episode 6, Episode 106, 98.5 The Sports Hub's newest headline anchor and co-host of the Zolek and Bertrand Show, Tim McCone. Tim, thank you so much for hopping on.
Thanks for having me, Cam. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. My first time, we were just talking before we started at the Sports Hub was two summers ago. I was an intern for Zoe and Beetle for about like 3-4 months in the summertime. And I saw as well, I think it was a year right after you left Channel 10. So for myself, I'm from Johnston, Rhode Island. I was wondering if you were from Rhode Island. Just talk about where you're from and how the sports background really started for you.
Yeah, so I'm actually from Worcester originally. So about an hour from Channel 10. And I went to school at Roger Williams. And so went there originally to play basketball. Turns out I was not a good basketball player. So that career ended pretty shortly into my college stay at Roger Williams, and so kind of transitioned to doing some sports stuff. So interned for NBC 10 when I was at Roger Williams, and then eventually my first job out of school was at a radio station in Worcester, WTAG, where I was doing intermissions and a weekly show for the Worcester Sharks, which were the AHL team at the time. In Worcester, and then eventually from there transitioned to do some TV at a station in Worcester, and then found my way back to NBC 10 with Rhode Island legend Frank Carpano and Rhode Island legend Joe Chiata, and was there for 5 years with those guys before eventually moving on to 98.5 here in Boston.
Yeah, I can't wait to dig deep into like all like the journeys that you've been through and the different types of positions you've held over the years. But going backtracking a little bit again to myself, like I had Hardy on the podcast again that time during my internship, and I remember hopping in the next day and the guys were hoping that it was bad just so they could like trash on it a little bit, but yep. in a good way, you know how they are. And but so hopefully this is just as good as Hardy's interview, but it was always a great time talking to those guys, and they were super cool. That was my first ever internship in college, so to be around like that every single day to see like what goes into radio and stuff like that. But for you, it was interesting because I saw like the timeline of your career kind of bouncing back between radio and anchoring. I wanted to know firsthand too, what was that transition like? You mentioned that you go to Roger Williams. What was your mindset going through school? Was it, I want to be on the radio, I want to anchor, or was it, I want to do journalism? What was your mindset at that point?
There was no mindset when I was at Roger Williams, and that was part of the reason I wasn't probably super successful as a student. My freshman year, we were all over the map. I always knew that I wanted to do something when it came to sports, whether that was coaching or whatever it happened to be, and wound up being a communications major and fell in love with sports talk radio, actually kind of landscaping during my college years. And that's when I kind of got hooked in terms of that platform itself. Well, in the TV side of it, that was really NBC 10 and going out with Frank and going out with Joe and going to the Patriots and kind of being inside the locker room and doing it. And so they're two completely different jobs. Like, yes, you are around the teams and yes, you're talking about the teams when it comes to sports talk radio. But the platforms themselves are entirely different. I think radio prepares you for TV a lot better than TV would prepare you for radio. And what I mean by that is just that, like, when you look at TV, you know, anchoring sports on the weekends at NBC 10, I would have 4 minutes. Here, our segments are 15 minutes. You have to fill, you have to talk. And so when it comes to doing a live shot at NBC 10, where you're out front of Gillette Stadium and you have to talk about the Patriots for a little bit and be live on camera, there's a certain comfort level that comes with being able to talk because of radio. And vice the going the other way, I'm not sure how well that translates. It's a little trickier of a transition, I think.
Yeah, and for school, again, you said you didn't have really a mindset of what you wanted to take out of this sports journey. But as far as making you know, demo reels and demo tapes. I know that's a big part of landing sports jobs. For yourself, what was it like landing that first gig with iHeartRadio? Did you have any tapes before at Roger Williams? And then, like, kind of going down the line, how did it get easier for you to make those tapes after having multiple different opportunities?
Yeah, I had a tape at Roger Williams, and the guys on Zolak and Bertrand found it. And much like you, Cam, they completely roasted me for it, and deservedly so. But I would say this for anyone that's in college or wants to get in this business. If you watch my tape in college, if I can go from what that was to where I am now, then anybody can do this, because it's the worst thing anyone's ever seen in their life. It was all-time terrible stuff. But, you know, there's certain comfort level that just comes with repetitions. And so that's what I tell any intern that we have, and whether that's TV or radio, but just the more reps you have doing something, the more comfortable you're going to be. And then the other part of it too, is obviously this is a business that's very reliant in terms of relationships and sort of who you know. And so as a student, when you have the opportunity to do internships, I always tell kids, do as many as you possibly can, right? I know you usually have to do one for school, but there's no reason that you can't do 2, 3, 4 and just build up your network, also build up experience. And on top of it, a lot of times, like with the internships in college, you get to do some really cool things. Like, as I remember interning at NBC 10, I got to go to the Patriots every single week, every Wednesday. I was inside the locker room, and you're bumping shoulders with Tom Brady and Randy Moss and stuff. And as a college kid, that's really cool, and to have that opportunity. So not only you're networking, but you're getting experiences and kind of getting a feel for the job and maybe what path you want to go in terms of your career as well. So I always tell kids, do as many tapes, resumes, podcasts, radio hits. If you have a radio show that you can do at school, do that. And then and do as many internships as you can, and just try to prepare yourself, for as many opportunities that may present themselves where you can say yes and sort of have a comfort level with that coming out of school.
Yeah, and I got lucky with this podcast too, because it's based off of where I'm from. It's not anything with the school or anything like that. And actually, I was probably like 10 or 20 episodes in when I started with Zoe and Beetle, and now I'm like past 100. And I've talked to, well, they know it, but Joe Mazzulla, his dad, Dan, was a huge part of my life growing up. And during that time too, I made a documentary on his life, premiered it the year after. So Joe really helped kickstart the podcast off the ground in 2021. And since then I've talked to professional athletes, broadcasters, and like, I never did it to like draw attention to wanted to draw attention to my name, but just being able to talk to people like yourself and athletes. And so I'm a huge Knicks fan. I talked to Bill Pito. He's the studio host for Madison Square Garden. So a lot of great advice, one. And two, it's so good to network. You talk a lot about networking, and that's how you kind of work your way up the ranks in this type of industry. So what was that kind of aha moment where you realized like, okay, this could be something bigger than I imagined, networking yourself around these different types of opportunities?
So like in terms of the networking, just as an example, every single job I've had outside of 98.5, I originally interned there, or I got it through a connection that I made through an internship. So whether that was WTAG and getting that opportunity to host intermissions for the Worcester Sharks, do post game, do Holy Cross football, and eventually that morning show, I had interned at that station 2 years before. And that was my first ever internship. The TV station that kind of launched me in Worcester, same thing. I interned with those guys for a summer and kind of learned the ropes from them. JAR and NBC 10 in Providence, same thing. That was my whole senior year. I was there for both semesters at JAR. So all those landing spots where I've wound up with full-time jobs came courtesy of internships outside of 98.5. And I'm not naive to think that I'm at 98.5 without any of those places either. So it's all connected in terms of that stuff and the opportunities that were presented through networking. The really cool thing for you is like to have the opportunity to have people on and do this podcast. Like when I was in college, that wasn't a thing. I don't think I'm that old, but apparently I am, because we didn't have that opportunity. You could do a weekly radio show at Roger Williams, and that was it. That was really your one shot at it. So I was with a couple of guys, and we would do a sports talk show for an hour, and it was what it was. But you're just already at such a higher level than what I was coming out of school because of the reps that you've gotten on this podcast, the connections that you've made. And you're right, it's not like when I say connections and having the opportunity to like know people and stuff like that, I'm not saying that like you're using people, but just you have people that you've made connection, real life connections with that you can lean on in terms of helping you with your career or any advice that you might want when you first get out of school, which every kid does because you don't know what you're doing. And so it's an unbelievable opportunity and a platform that you've kind of created for yourself. And you're already miles ahead of the game in terms of where I was coming out of school.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It's so crazy how much Zoom has helped all of that, the trajectory of everything, because a lot of the guys I had on when I was at the Sports Hub was like Hardy, like Bob Soucy, Sean Grandy. Like those are guys that it's like 8-year-old Cam would be like, and like I would not imagine being able to talk to with the Celtics voice, or the Patriots voice, or a host of a radio show, a sports radio show. So that helped me out a lot at that internship too. And I remember T-Bone, Tom Morgan, who was a huge help, gave me a letter of recommendation as well. He would give me like the contacts of these people, like emails, like reach out, say you're an intern. And I took it upon myself just every day to try to meet somebody new or connect with somebody new. And even like last year, you mentioned how when you were at NBC as an intern, I was at Channel 12 as an intern last summer under Maury Hirschgordon, Sam Knox, Taylor Bigley. They were tremendous. And I was at Patriots practice, like you said, every day. Patriots practices, Porzingis signed with the Celtics, Jaylen Brown had that big contract extension. I'm at all these things as like a 20-year-old. So it made the vision like real, like, okay, this senior year, I just got to like attack it, make a really bang up real demo resume and all that. So I guess going off of that, I mean, your time in NBC was probably like the longest time you've been at a position. Was it like a little bit over 6 years?
Five and change. Probably about 5 years.
Five and change.
Yeah, around there.
So for myself, coming from Rhode Island, I mean, Frank Carpano was an icon as well, and he's been a good mentor of mine. What was your favorite part of not only working with him, but your favorite part of just covering Rhode Island sports in general? Because I know you had a job with Cox TV as well, covering like PC and URI hoops. Just talk a little bit about that. Your favorite part of covering Rhode Island.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge college basketball guy, and so that's honestly my favorite sport. So to have the ability at Channel 10 at the time, we had the coaches show. So, you know, we would have Ed Cooley in every week to do that, which was awesome, and to be able to cover the Big East. Dan Hurley was at URI when I was there. Bryant was up and coming at the time as well. Obviously, like the Ivy League kind of speaks for itself. So to be able to cover all those college basketball programs when I was in Providence was really special. And I just think Providence in terms of a sports market is really hard to beat, because, you know, especially when you're working at one of those stations down there, whether it's Six with Nick Coy and Ian Steele, who are phenomenal, or the everyone at Channel 12 and Channel 10, you get to cover all the Boston pro teams and then also get to mix in high level college basketball. And also get to focus on, you know, some really cool high school stories as well. So it just gives you a really cool opportunity to find some really interesting stories at three different levels of sports. And that was probably my favorite thing, being able to cover college basketball and some of those college teams that did some really special things when I was there too. So it was a perfect storm in terms of not only my interests, but also the level that all those programs were at when I was there.
Did you ever have like a welcome to TV news moment? Like I always ask athletes and broadcasters, like they're welcome to the league or welcome to like the industry moment. Do you have any of those getting into like anchoring and stuff like that?
Yeah, of course. my first ever, I tell this story all the time, and I tell it to interns and stuff like that, because I think it's a good lesson. You know, my first ever big time interview with someone that was on the professional level was Brad Stevens, was named head coach of the Boston Celtics. I am, like I said, a huge college basketball fan. So Brad Stevens was one of my favorite coaches at the time. Loved what he did with the Butler program. Thought it was really, really cool and special what he was able to do. And so when the Celtics announced him as head coach, they said that we had an opportunity to go down there and do a one-on-one interview with Brad Stevens. And I was like, this is unbelievable. All right, here we go. Stayed up the whole night prior, writing out a bunch of questions, figuring out what I'm going to say. You know, I get to the practice facility, which at the time was in Waltham. And, you know, there's like ESPN set up with multi-cameras. There's NBC Sports Boston, multi-camera shoots, sets, all this stuff. I'm drenched in sweat. carrying in all my stuff, one man banding it. I had my notepad, super nervous, but also excited. I mean, the questions I was asking were absolutely ridiculous. Like, just trying to show off, like, what, you know, like, oh, the way you used Rodney Clark in your final year, like, how do you see these? Like, who is this clown that's asking these questions? Like, me and Brad Stevens are going to become best friends off of, like, five questions that I ask him. Either way, super excited, ready to rip, sit down, set up all my gear. He sits down, and I hit record on the camera, and all the prep I did, everything like that, I forgot to put in a chip. So there was nothing to record. I had no tape in. I had no... I had nothing. It was just a camera with no video. So I was 23, 24, way too nervous to admit that, like, I totally screwed up. So I interviewed him for like 4 minutes, knowing that it was not recording and there was nothing I could do. And then, got up, called my news director. He laughed and was like, yep, learning experience. I never forgot a chip. After that, but yeah, that was my welcome to the TV news, one man banding, disaster of a moment, but it was a good opportunity for me. And it was also a good learning experience. Cause look, stuff happens. It's not the end of the world. It's going to be okay. You know, you're covering sports and not take it as seriously as I probably was at the time. It was a good learning experience, funny story. And yeah, that was probably my most memorable interview I'll ever do, for sure. Because man, that feeling, the pit in your stomach when you realize that you completely screwed up your first ever big interview was, something to remember for sure.
So he laughed it off and didn't shred you after that?
I didn't tell him. No, that's what I'm saying. I didn't say it. I was too embarrassed to admit that I screwed up. So I pretended like everything was fine and just interviewed him for like 3 minutes. I was like, all right, we're good. He was like, oh, that's it? I was like, yeah, we're good. Let's just move on. And then I walked out knowing that I didn't have anything. So that was it.
Yeah. Your boss too had the same reaction? He laughed it off?
My boss would, luckily, yes. Luckily, my time, my boss laughed it off. So yeah, there certainly are some people that would not have. I was a relatively new reporter, and again, you know, stuff happens. You screw up, it's fine. Gonna be okay. So yeah, it'll happen to you too. You'll get to some place. I guarantee. You'll forget a battery. You'll forget your chip for your camera. You'll screw up and you'll be like, oh my god, I can't believe I just did this. Hopefully it's not with the Boston Celtics head coach, but yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen.
I don't want to toot my own horn to give myself a pat on the back, but I always made sure when I was interning with 12 that whenever they were like, Cam, can you just grab this? Like, I never forgot anything. And it was only three months. It was only three months. So I'm sure if it was a year.
Yeah, that's what happens. You get a little cocky, get a little confident, and then all of a sudden you forget it. So yeah, there you go. And just remember that story and then maybe it won't happen to you. Cause like I said, I never forgot anything after that. That's for sure.
So, you know, what's crazy right now, I'm thinking in my head because I just landed a job with KSN 16 and ABC 12 out in Joplin, Missouri. Yeah, thank you. I'm going to be moving out August 5th. I start on August 12th. And one of their biggest things down there is covering the Chiefs. So when you were talking about Brad and your first interview, if they're ever like, Cam, we need you to interview, like, say, Mahomes, that would be amazing. But I got to think of that in my head, like, oh, Tim told me not to forget this. And go in there, you know, with an open mind. But
yeah.
I'm excited. That's going to be fun. But now backtracking a little bit more. So during your time at NBC 10, you had the opportunity with the Sports Hub in 2013. That came about. Talk about how that opportunity came for you and what it was like balancing being on air as a reporter and then, again, do the radio life too, because I know like those times they might conflict at points. But talk about what it was like for you at that point in 2013.
Yeah, so, balancing those, I guess we'll start with just balancing the two of them, because you're right. Like, when my entire time at NBC 10, I was also at 98.5 part-time, and so a lot of that stuff did sort of overlap, and they were just long days and kind of figuring out your schedule. So I would work night shifts at NBC 10 the majority of the time, which would be 4 to midnight, and so that meant that in terms of my availability during the week for 98.5, it was usually midday, and that was it. So I would work 10 to 2 here at 98.5, and then I would drive down to Providence and work 4 to midnight. So those were sort of typical days in the summer when they were filling opportunities during the week at 98.5. If I would work a day shift, let's say there was a Patriots practice that I was covering or something like that, you would flip it. So I would work, you know, whatever it wound up being at NBC 10, 9 to 5, whatever it was. And then I would come here and work the night shift and fill in with Jones or whoever it was that I'd be working with. So that was kind of how I balanced it. It was obviously NBC 10 was my full-time job. So it was just kind of figuring out shifts that 98.5 that worked around it. As for like sort of the two mediums, like I said, they're entirely different, and you certainly are not going to offer as much commentary during a normal sports cast at like an NBC 10 or a Channel 12. You know, certainly we had, you know, we had a Patriots show on Sunday nights at NBC 10 where we could do a little more of that. Same thing with the coaches show with Coach Cooley at the time. You know, you had more of an opportunity sort of give your take on the current situation. But for the most part, you're just kind of delivering the news and sort of facts and things that happened on those sports casts typically, which is obviously a lot different at 98.5 where, you know, you're on for a significant amount of time giving your opinion on things. And it tends to get a little looser and a little more off the rails than what it certainly does in television. So that was kind of balancing it from a scheduling perspective, and also knowing that the two roles are sort of different in terms of what you're bringing to the table on the air.
So was it more so when looking to like see like these job opens, you kind of looked at it as again, it was a part-time gig. It wasn't full-time. You still were able to keep the NBC 10 job, but what's that application process like? I know, again, like I just said, part-time, but you talk to them about what you already got going on, the past experiences and everything like that. How do you rack up like a tape, I guess, like we were just talking about how all these jobs want to see you like doing these things. So again, you just said reporting is completely different. So what was that application process like in trying to get this gig?
So for NBC 10, it was like you talked about, you made like a demo reel. And yeah. So I had been at Channel 3 in Worcester for four years, I think, at the time. And so sent in my reel to NBC 10 and then had an interview with those guys. 98.5 was completely different. So 98.5 actually ran a contest in 2013 looking for on-air hosts. And so they had, I wish I'd asked Lauf prior to this, but I want to say over 2,000 people sort of apply for it. And what they did was they had different locations, 10 different locations that they had these events at. And you would go on and you would read headlines. And from each of those locations, they picked a winner from the location based on your tape that you did live. And then from that 10, you went into the station, interviewed, they got it down to 4. And then that final 4 did 30 minutes each with Hardy at the time. And then based on that 30 minutes, they selected a winner. And so out of that process, Matt McCarthy actually won the whole thing. But out of that process, it was both myself and Matt McCarthy that came out of that. And that's how we wound up at 98.5. So it was just the two live opportunities. One was a headlines read, and then the other was a full 30-minute show with Hardy, and that's how we wound up at 98.5.
Was that anticipation kind of leading up to what the final decision was, like, kind of hectic? Like, knowing that, again, over 2,000 people are applying to this, what was your headspace like at that point?
No, it was not, because I had plenty of people that informed me when we went. So when it went to the final four, they actually had a live event at a bar in Boston. And so they pulled the names out of the hat. I went second, and I had a bunch of people at the bar sort of supporting me at the time. And then you couldn't really hear anything because the place was packed. So you couldn't hear the people that were actually on the air, but I had plenty of people listening at home texting me during my half hour, hey, you're crushing it. This looks great. I think you're going to get it. And then Matt McCarthy went right after me. And I think I got texts like 2 minutes after being like, yeah, you're not going to win this. He's got it in the bag. And so went to the bar because I just lost my dream job. Had a few drinks during the final like 2 hours that they were on, because there was commercials and everything like else like that. And they were kind of blowing it out a little bit. And then Rick Radzik, who's now our current program director, comes up to the final four afterwards. And it's like, hey, whoever won, we're going to announce you're going to do like 15 more minutes with Hardy as the winner. At this point, I didn't know, first of all, we were going back on. I thought I had lost the job. So I'm pretty banged up. And I'm like, man, if I actually win this thing, I'm going to get fired before I even get this job, because I'm going to be drunk on the air within like 5 minutes of me winning. Luckily, McCarthy did win, and everyone was right. He was better than me in those 30 minutes. And then 98.5 reached out afterwards and said, "Hey, if you want to do some stuff with us," which obviously I did, "we'd love to have you," which was obviously a huge win and a huge opportunity for me. But yeah, so didn't win that, and it's a good thing, like I said, because I was drinking my sorrows away at the time of it. So there you go. Two lessons. Don't drink before you find out whether or not you get the job, and always remember a battery and a chip whenever you go out and do TV interviews. Those are two pieces of advice I can give you.
Yeah, and I asked about the welcome to the industry with reporting. That was your Brad Stevens moment with the Sports Hub. Was that the welcome to the Sports Hub moment, or was it after, once you were secured into the gig, was there something else?
No. So that didn't even feel like 98.5 at that point, because you weren't at the station. It was a live remote and stuff like that. So yeah, no, my welcome to the Sports Hub moment was doing my first ever headlines shift. It was a Saturday. At that point, it was Bertrand and Gasper on the weekends. It was the hockey show. So the hockey show always has, like, at that time, there must have been four or five people in the studio. Bertrand and Gasper are getting ready to move in, and they're like, "Who the hell is this 25-year-old right now that no one's ever heard of in this studio, about to do headlines and doing it in front of like eight people that I've been listening to like since I was in high school?" So it was that was kind of my welcome to the Sports Hub moment for sure.
Was that, you think, your most memorable before this big promotion, or is there something in between that you can think back and be like, "Wow, this is crazy that I get to do this for a job"?
I have plenty of opportunities. We're working with everyone at 98.5, all the full-time shows, whether it's Felger and Maz, working at night with Jones, Joe Murray over the years, all that stuff. The opportunities that we've had at 98.5 sort of throughout have been special. So no, by the time that I got this job with Zolak and Bertrand, it's been already a really good run at 98.5 for sure.
When they do live radio shows at like Patriots camp or like certain spots, like even like during the Super Bowl, like they'll go down to Vegas or wherever they're at, like on Radio Row. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to do that, but what's been your most memorable spot you've been able to like have a live show at?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot here. Patriots camp certainly throughout is always fun. I just always love going to training camp. So being able to do some shows there have always been really fun. Doing some pregame stuff for big time playoff games, even if you're not in the building, you know, whether there's a big Celtics game and you're doing pregame, halftime, and postgame, is always a really cool opportunity. So there have been plenty of them. But in terms of like remotes, I would probably say, you know, those Brady years and being able to be down at the stadium for that type of stuff is probably up there for sure.
Yeah, those Brady moments must have been sick. I remember so Sam Knox was somebody that I looked up to at Channel 12. I don't know if you know Sam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, great guy. Now he's one of my good friends and somebody that I can keep looking up to as like I go on in my journey. But his first – I think he interned with Nick – yeah, he interned with Nick Coit and Ian Steele at 6.
Yeah.
And one of his first times when we talked on the pod was watching Brady walk out for practice.
Yeah.
Do you have your first memory of being able to cover Brady in those years?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that first opportunity and sort of taste of covering the Patriots was interning at Channel 10 in Providence. And so every Wednesday I would go with Joe Chiata down for Brady's press conference and then go inside the locker room with those guys. So that was really the first opportunity that I got to sort of cover the Patriots and see Brady up close and personal. And to your point, that was sort of what fueled me in terms of like, all right, I want to be around, this is what I want to do. I want to be around this. I want to have these opportunities to kind of go behind the scenes, tell these stories. And so that was really the year, and it was 2009, 2010, at the time, when that stuff happened. And it was that was the moment for sure where I realized that this is what I wanted to do for a career.
Yeah. Now to this present day, officially announced back in April, but I'm sure you knew before the news broke. And I know like on the day that the news did break, those guys ran the clip of you at Roger Williams. So I'm going to have to run that at some point in some of my social media postings. But again, the anticipation leading up to that, I know like an application process probably has to happen before that. And I'm sure people at the station were eager to get this position, but for yourself, you know, your mental state, your plan of attack, all that before you ended up getting the job.
Yeah. I mean, obviously was super interested in it. The moment it came open, it was an opportunity. Like I said, you know, From a schedule perspective, I was really limited in terms of some of the places I could fill in when I was at JAR, and one of them was middays. And I worked a lot of those shifts and got to know those guys really well, and always loved working on that show, because as much as I like sports, I also like the fact that those guys can go off the rails and it's not just 10 to 2. Here, sports takes 24/7, but there's more of a blend, it feels like, in terms of the morning show and also 2 to 6, right? It's kind of combining those two shows, I feel like, is what the midday sort of is. And so I've always really enjoyed working with both of those guys, and on top of it, certainly T-Bone and Milliken too. And then, you know, to have the opportunity to be on that show, which is one that I think I fit really well into, it was just a natural fit. And again, super lucky, because there's a ton of talented people that could have done this job just like me, no question about it. So fortunate to have the opportunity, fortunate to work with these guys, and fortunate to be at a station that obviously is having unbelievable success right now.
Yeah, and when they rolled that tape back from your college days, did you know they were doing it? And like, what was your, was you, like, during that moment, I could tell you were laughing, but like, what was that like?
Look, I certainly have no issue laughing at myself, as you can tell throughout some of these stories that we've told on this podcast. So not ashamed of it by any stretch of the imagination or embarrassed by it. I mean, it's pretty terrible. And it's something that, quite honestly, I play a lot of the interns that I've had at JR or either at 98.5 to say, like, hey, you're going to suck at this to start. You know, there's very few people that are really naturally gifted. There's been a couple interns that have from the jump. Stone Freeman, a guy at URI, I think has just always been a pro's pro from the time he was 10 years old, it feels like. But there are very few Stone Freemans out there. There's a lot more Tim McCones in terms of what they are like when they first try to do this stuff. So, no, I did not know. I knew that T-Bone knew about that because I think I've shown it to him in the past. But I did not know that they were going to roll that out. So that was certainly a nice way. But again, that's part of why I love that show, because it's just kind of busting. But it feels like you're just kind of busting balls with your friends, right? And so certainly cool with it. And it's a tape that I've tried to get deleted for a long time off of YouTube.
Yeah,
can't figure out how to do it, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, T-Bone loves to fuel the fire. He's the best. I remember.
Then act like nothing happened. Like, oh, I didn't have anything to do with it. I'm like, all right, dude. Yeah, yeah. No.
I was like, I told you, I was first starting off my podcast. And when I had Hardy on, he's like, yeah, we're going to use some bits. Or well, maybe I'll use some bits if you screw up and like put it on the air, like to scare me or whatever. But then getting to know his personality, it's cool, because that's kind of like his way of showing that like he respects you in a way, and he respects the way you go about stuff. Especially like when I was telling you about the documentary that I premiered on Joe's dad, they plugged it on the Sports Hub, like when I dropped the trailer, when they were talking to Joe. And this was last year's playoff run. I think it was like the first or second round, but they talked to Joe. Obviously, you guys talked to Joe, obviously, every Thursday during the season. And they plugged my name, and I'm sure T-Bone had a say in that and said, oh, Cam's doing this or whatever. And Louth's been huge too, because I know he's a Rhode Island guy. So nothing but love for those guys. They've been helping me out a ton. And I always think back when we were talking about my my welcome to the Sports Hub moment was like my first day, the last, you know, how they always treat the interns. Like my last 10 minutes of my shift, I think it was, or something like that. Zoe had me come into the studio, bring him a glass of water. They had me sit down, and then we were talking, and then all my friends were sending me pictures like, did you just get Zoe a glass of water? What's wrong with you? Like, like, I can't say no. What am I going to do? They're live on the air. But that was cool. That was really, really cool. But I honestly don't remember me. I mean, I remember meeting you a handful of times, but like I said, I tried to network as much as possible. So I credit the Sports Hub so much for really kickstarting that passion to continue this journey. But as far as capping off the show, I want to just talk about Zoe and Beetle quick, and how they've been to you these past few months, now that you're in the chair and you're in the third spot, and how they've helped you again since the start of you being at the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, both those guys have been great to me, and you know, even when I was a part-time guy, for sure. And so ever since I've joined, they've both been really supportive and have had my back, and certainly are a big reason why I have the job that I have right now. And so I've been able to kind of lean on them throughout the transition. Hardy was a huge piece of that show. Hardy is super talented, and so certainly hard shoes to fill, but both of those guys have done everything that they could possibly do to make me as comfortable as possible in terms of the transition. And I think it's just going to continue to get better every single day that we're sort of together. And so that chemistry is going to continue to grow, and I think the show's in a really good spot, to be honest with you. I think both of those guys too are pros bros, and so excited for sort of what is to come, and football season as well, I think, is going to be a big part of that too. So they've been great. But quite honestly, everybody that I've worked with at 98, I don't have like a horror story. And sometimes you hear that stuff at stations. I think one of the things that sort of sets 98.5 apart outside of the monster ratings are the fact that just a bunch of really good guys here that are willing to sort of help each other. And if you're a part-time guy filling in on a full-time show, it's not like people talk down to you or anything like that. No, they do everything they possibly can to make you as successful as possible. And so when you look at the rating success and all that stuff, and then you look at like sort of the culture that's at this station too, I don't think that's an accident. I really don't. And so those guys have been great to me, but really, I don't have a bad thing to say about anybody that works at 98.5. Honestly, everyone that I've worked with on the air has been phenomenal and done everything they can to help me be as successful as possible.
Yeah, and likewise. And you talk about the success before we cap off. Do you ever feel like there's that many people watching you at once, or is it kind of just like natural at this point?
No, it's natural at this point. I know, yeah. It's you don't really think about it. Certainly, like when you go out to places, or if you go to a Celtics game or something like that, and you know, a bunch of people will come up to you and say hi. That's kind of like those moments when you're like, wow, you kind of forget how many people sort of watch or listen to you. But at the time, no, not really. You know, I'd be like much more, I think like talking in front of a room of like 250 people would probably be more intimidating than kind of what we do at this point, just from a comfort level standpoint. You know, I don't necessarily talk in front of like big audiences as often. So I would probably have like, not that I would have a ton of butterflies, but I'd probably have a little more butterflies than I would being at 98.5 at this point and just kind of on this show, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously for someone like myself, I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet, but hopefully once that time comes, I'm excited to see, you know, what it brings. And I talked about like the first time I was able to be on the air. I think I was on the air a few other times, but just like briefly, but it's crazy how many people listen to the show and they're tuned in, especially my friends and family and everything like that. So I'm excited. Tim, I wish you the best of luck and everything else that comes your way. I appreciate you for hopping on Camp's Corner. Episode 106, season 4, episode 6. And again, Cam's One Corner, all social media platforms. Tim, you want to plug any social medias for the followers?
I just want to say 106, and I'm 10. So you had 105 people, or did you have some recurring guests before you had to get to me? What happened here?
Let's think. Probably like four reoccurring guests, but yeah, but outside of that, 100 guests. Yeah.
All right. So we're at the bottom of the barrel now at this point. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure, Tim. And again, Tim's on 10 to 2, Zolek and Bertrand throughout the week. Go tune into Tim. I'll definitely plug some of those social media links down below. Cam's One Corner on all social media platforms, podcast platforms, YouTube. We'll see you guys in the next episode of Cam's Corner. Tim, thank you so much one more time.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it. On a break.